Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter's nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Welcome to ENN on this Thursday evening. I'd like to start off, as always, by saying good evening to Michael.
Never had a bean, never had a soup.
And then I'd like to say good evening to Don.
We've got a hockey game going on the other side.
Excuse me?
We've got a hockey game going on the other side.
Mike Brouncher. I still can't believe it, Peter. All the people, like Pete Doherty and Ryan Hurley, he misses Mike Brouncher the most. Like Dorothy turning to the Scarecrow. I'll miss you the most. Well, at least Scarecrow was important. Brouncher leaves. The station runs. You don't even feel it.
But it's more about, like Hurley has been on our Zoom meetings before the show.
Well, have Andrew put Brouncher on the Zoom meeting.
And Pete, unless he's sucking up to you during a lunch, he's not really popping in all that often.
It's a hot take.
So Brouncher is a part of the everyday. And I miss him terribly.
Wow. You're so odd. That's why I love you, but you're so odd.
My brother just sent me a great text on. You know, my brother's not a big sports fan. And I guess he was listening to the show. And he just texted me, Stump Merrill, ... That's a real person.
Yeah. And what really helped Stump Merrill as far as, like, his legacy is people sometimes will confuse him with Stump Mitchell, the running back for the Cardinals. That happened all the time.
Don, I'll give you $2 next time I see you. If you could, within 5 seconds, tell me Stump Merrill's first name, real first name.
Steve. Steve Stump Merrill.
No, it's not Steve Merrill.
John.
Carl.
Carl's a tough one, right?
Why? Crazy Carl. What's wrong with Carl?
How many Carls do you know?
I know Junior.
Weathers.
I'm saying it's a fairly common
Junior,
name.
Junior, Weathers.
But there's a lot of people. I don't know a Carl.
You've never known a Carl?
No, I never said that because I got to know Carl Bean, the late Carl Bean. PA announcer at Fenway because he was our stringer in Boston for Sports Phone.
I knew a Carl. Great name. Listen to this name. A friend of mine in college. Listen to this name, Don. You're going to love it. Carl Noble.
Ooh, that's beautiful. Really good.
Or how is that? That's a beautiful name. But you're right. I don't know a lot of Carls, but I don't think it's a bad name.
I don't say it's a bad. It's a tough one, meaning like you can't really think of too many people. It's a common name that nobody seems to have.
It's a not-so-common common name.
Right.
After Billy Madison, you have to call every Carl Crazy Carl. It's the only option you have. So, speaking of Carl, Jeremy Lin's going to be on Carlin tonight.
I got to tell you, nobody on the station promotes the show better than Chris Carlin. Even the promos during our show have made me want to listen to this.
No, not only that, and this part I'm being dead serious about, let's just call it what it is. Many people have had shows, middays, nights, etc. And I don't care if this causes a problem. I'm going to say it right now. And if it stirs the pot, Don, and it gets people infighting, good. That's what I want to happen.
Good. Stir it.
No one's worked harder on their show than Chris Carlin does on his. Take it. How about that?
I don't think there's any question.
No one's booking as hard. No, he tries to make every night an event. Now, listen, it may be because when he first worked here, for the first 3 months, he did 7 shows. But regardless, it's every night there's a big guest.
But he does have a bit of an advantage because
he's so
producer
handsome.
Runs in his blood, right? Because he produced Afternoon
Do you know when
Drive
he taped the Lin
so
interview?
Long.
Right.
You know when he taped it? Like at 8 o'clock in the morning today.
Right. That's why he's showing up at the station hours early. The man's always working.
Don, Carl Nelson you left out.
And Carl Banks.
Carl Banks and Carl Reiner.
Reiner, Banks, Yastrzemski, there's a lot.
Well, Carl Nelson did sign the kid's book. I consider Carl Banks a friend. I don't know Carl Reiner personally. Love his work.
He's 98 years old.
Who, Reiner?
Carl Reiner's 98, yeah.
I thought you meant Banks.
No, Carl Nelson or Carl Banks.
Let's hear from Jeremy Lin. This, you're going to hear this on at 7 o'clock, the big interview with Jeremy Lin and Chris Carlin. He said he felt a little bit helpless during Linsanity.
It was scary. It was very scary. It felt like the only thing I could really control was maybe the plays that we were calling and how our team was playing. But beyond that, like, nothing else felt like was within my control. And, I mean, it was just very scary. And life came so fast and it hit so hard. And there were so many positives, so many positives. But, you know, so many negatives as well, and so many people and that, you know, maybe I loved and trusted, and so many things that, you know, I just didn't understand the world. I was just kind of thrown into it, and it was baptism by fire, and I don't think people understood, like, that type of thing. It took me years to recover from.
He also said he never wanted to leave the Knicks.
When I first got that contract, I had just finished work on my agent called me and was like, hey, this is a contract. Houston upped their offer. And I remember just telling my agent, like, no. Like, at that time, I didn't know anything about Houston. I didn't want to go to Houston. I told my agent, I was like, I don't want to go to Houston. I don't want more money. Tell them to give me less money. Tell them to give me less years. Tell them to take away the poison pill. Like, is there any other way that we can, like, go back to New York? And he was like, no. He was like, there are 30 teams, and you don't have a single contract offer from all 30 teams except for Houston. You have no choice but to sign this. You have to sign it. Otherwise, you literally don't have an NBA contract. And I just remember thinking to myself, I was just like, no, there has to be a way. And I was like begging my agent, like, go tell Houston to bring the money down. And they were like, Houston refuses to.
Can you ever, of the three of us, I guess Don would be the most likely utter the words.
100%.
Give me less money.
Don's the only one who would do it.
I would never say it.
Never. Mm. You'd sooner drop dead.
So you're telling
Carl Spackler.
Carl Malone, by the way, my brother.
Carl Malone.
Yeah,
but I think you were thinking C. Carl's, not
yeah,
K.
I was.
Carl's.
How do you know that's what I was thinking?
Well, it doesn't matter, though. That's not fair.
No,
what about George Carl? He's last name and a K.
But you're telling me, Michael, that you become a free agent with the Yankees.
Yeah.
And the Texas Rangers offer you more money.
Right.
You're going to say no.
No. I wouldn't say no because I wanted less money. I'd say no because I want to stay with the Yankees. But he asked the Rockets to offer him less money so that the Knicks could offer could match.
Right.
But well, I don't think I could ever say please give me less money.
By the way, if that's true and they still dislike him here, come on.
Because that story hasn't gotten out till now.
Yeah.
I remember when Houston. It's probably the only time I've ever disagreed with Ian O'Connor. He wrote the story, you remember this, Don?
Sure.
Excoriating the Knicks for not matching. And I said, first of all, he's not that great a player. And second of all, why would you take on a contract like that that's going to just hinder you in 3 years where you can't do anything? And, of course, I was right and Ian was wrong.
I got to tell you, Michael's not a podcast guy, but I would love to do just a podcast about not ESPN Radio. 98.7. I think we were on 98.7 at the time, not 1050. About those 3 weeks and the show, Peter. The stories we have, but callers,
it's
saying
it's
he should go to the Hall of Fame. We were getting calls that he's a Hall of Famer. I got a chance to do a Nick. I did a Nick pre and post. The only Nick pre and post I ever did.
Wow, lucky you. That's when you got to do it.
Was a game in Minnesota with Linsanity. And it was so big, Peter, that it was a Saturday night Knick game in Minnesota, 8 o'clock tip. I came in early to do the work. They actually got Stephen A. to do like a 4 to 7 show or like a 5 to 7:30 show. Got Stephen A. to come in, do a local show on Saturday because it was leading in to a Linsanity game.
Jeremy Lin.
Unbelievable.
Jeremy Lin and them boys trying to get the win.
I got to tell you, it was so fun. I was so in. You guys know one of the great sporting events of my life, as Iron Sheik say, one of the best things all time my whole life. I went to the Lakers-Knicks game, Lin versus Kobe. And Ashanti performed the national anthem. And after Ashanti performed the national anthem, they put her in the second row.
Oh, that's wrong.
And whoever she was with, I don't know if it was her that was upset, but someone was upset that they gave her second row after performing the national anthem. It was a Friday night, ESPN, Kobe versus the Knicks. Remember, any other time, a star of Ashanti's caliber is getting front row. And particularly,
she could get a folding chair at half court.
And particularly if she did the national anthem. But she was upset and they left. So I was hanging out with a pass and not a seat and got given Ashanti's seats. Which I remained in and dig this.
For 3 days.
At halftime, they came back and were like, they changed their mind. They want the seats back.
Oh,
they argued for a whole half and then gave up and were like, at this point, I had to leave in the third quarter when Kobe and Lynn were just battling back and forth, and I watched sort of the rest of it from the tunnel. But that moment in time, considering it didn't lead to anything playoff-wise, no championship, and no one will ever be able to understand who didn't live through it and was close to it, that it didn't matter there was no championship. It's one of the biggest things that's ever happened in this town. Like, I mean, sports-wise, it was... I'm so jealous I wasn't on the air with you guys. What a time that must have been.
And knowing what we know now about Kobe probably came into the Garden that day, I'm going to shut this guy down, and he couldn't. And I will tell you this. You know I'm a Carmelo Anthony fan, always defended him. He was terrible about Lynn. Because in 8 games when he was injured, the Knicks were 7-1 with Jeremy Lin running the point. 7-1.
I think the only loss was to the Hornets at the Garden.
Could be. That big that win game in Toronto. I mean, the whole deal.
Oh, the Toronto was the buzzer beater.
And Carmelo gets back, and he will not allow them to run what makes Lynn run, which is drive the lane, kick out, or take the ball right to the basket, because Carmelo needs the ball on a spot, and then he needs to ISO there. And he would not run what made Jeremy Lin great. And that just completely submarined him. And then Lin got hurt. Then D'Antoni he ended up saying that he resigned because he knew he could not make Carmelo do it. Carmelo is a star. But Carmelo wanted no part of bending his game for Jeremy Lin. None. That's the one mark against Carmelo that I don't have a defense for.
There are people out there who say that a lot of the tension there, though, was, and I know this isn't my favorite thing to hear, but athletes feel that it was media created. That there wasn't really that tension beforehand, but that the media started building a story of Carmelo's not happy.
Here's what I would give it. I would give that some credence. And, Michael, you'll remember this. That was the major talking point even before Carmelo came back was, will Carmelo be able – will this continue with Jeremy Lin? Will he get along with Jeremy Lin? So I think there was a theme, like, we knew – You knew that it was going to be a problem, and it turned out to be a problem.
I mean, I don't want to see why. I don't think it was media-driven, Peter. Maybe we picked up on it and ran with it.
Yeah.
It was just in terms of style. Their styles could not mesh. They can't do the same things. So if Jeremy Lin's going to run an offense where he's going to pass the ball around the top, back, get to Carmelo with 15 seconds and move out of the way, how does Jeremy Lin score? Jeremy Lin's going to score by taking the ball to the basket, and if there's somebody there, kicking it out to somebody with an open shot. Thematically, they did not mesh, and Carmelo wanted no part of trying because he was not going to get into a running game. That was not his style. He was an ISO player.
David Falk, Michael Jordan's forever agent, was on the Sports Junkies in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. And he spoke highly of Michael Jordan.
I watch a lot of NBA games, as you know. And, you know, the game evolves. And Michael, because he's such a class act, completely steers away from trying to compare himself to LeBron or Kobe or anybody else. That's for the fans to do. But if you ask me, watching all these games with virtually zero defense, no hand check, I think if Jordan played today, if he was in his prime in today's rules, I think he'd average between 50 and 60 a game. I think he'd shoot 75. He shoots 75% from the floor. I mean, he'd be completely, if you couldn't hand check him, he'd be completely unstoppable.
No bias there. That's just his take.
Well, I mean, there's no hand-checking, and, I mean, the Pistons would foul out in 6 minutes, so they could never hit him the way they hit him. I don't know if he'd average 50 a game, because remember,
the one thing
that he didn't have, I mean, he wasn't known as a great three-point shooter, and the league wasn't three-point-centric like it is now. And you look at that, you know, the finals game that he had against
Portland.
Portland. You know, he comes out firing three, so he could definitely do it. But
that's this weekend on the show, by the way.
That is this week. And also the Knicks rivalry.
Oh, it's Knicks and Blazers this weekend?
And the premiere of Billions. I don't know what to do.
We should get Koppelman on the show.
We could if you'd like.
I mean, I know he did. I think he's doing some press. By the way, I'm a season behind on Billions.
What's wrong with you?
I know. I need to.
You don't have any
time? So the show's actually starting then. Because we've had how many shows end during the pandemic, right?
This is starting.
Dina Lipschitz Creek last season.
Love Dina Lipschitz.
Done. Modern Family, done. And this Wednesday is the series finale of Brockmire.
That's right.
Oh, the series finale. It's over.
How was yesterday's done? I haven't watched it yet.
It's terrific.
Really? Okay.
It's really good.
We already covered this. You guys don't even listen to each other. So
No. He said yesterday that last week was great, which I agree. Yeah. I've not seen yesterday's.
Oh, sorry. I assumed it was both.
We haven't covered. Why don't you listen?
Yeah. Good show.
Jason Eyre, the director of The Last Dance, was on with Jalen and Jacoby, and he said that interviewing Dennis Rodman for last week's episode is like trying to interview a feral cat. He's not looking in the same place. He got those big shades on. Every other sentence was going back to Kim Jong-un and how he was going to be in the history books. He was also 2 hours late and constantly had to be reminded about the subject at hand.
Wow.
Sorry, real quick, Don. He sits down, and they're just kind of chatting, and out of nowhere, Rodman goes, "I need a tuna sub from Subway and chamomile tea."
Got to have the chamomile tea with a tuna sub.
And there you go. And that's how we. And guess what, though? It ended up being a pretty damn useful interview with Dennis Rodman.
Well, it was good because he's terrific.
Did you see, guys, what noted documentarian Ken Burns said about this?
Ooh, I'm interested.
He lit my ears up. What?
You got my ears here. What?
Yeah.
Lit it up. He said, "I'm sorry, you are not recording history when you do a documentary that is controlled by the subject that could say yay or nay. That can tell you which way to go." He said Michael Jordan allowed this to happen. He said there's no way that's a proper documentary. He said I'm not going to be that engrossed in it because it's not historical. He said I do history. I don't do this.
If I'm a competitor of ours, I make another Bulls documentary right now with no involvement from them.
But so there's only one way to do a documentary, according to
Well, it's just not a documentary.
It wouldn't be a documentary then, is what he's saying. A documentary shouldn't have. I mean, although Jason was on this and said Michael didn't tell us to change anything,
but he still saw it.
Said that if Michael wanted to change something, he could have, because he had all the tapes.
Well, the fact that Michael's seeing cuts early. I hear the argument. I love it. I think it's great, and I don't think. And who cares? It's sports. This isn't. No offense, guys. I know this is what we do. It's not real news. Who cares? But I do hear the argument. You know, like when Beyoncé did her documentary for HBO, that wasn't a real documentary. It was a promo piece for Beyoncé. Now, this isn't the same as that at all. I don't think this is a promo piece. No. And also, I will say this, though, before Ken Burns crushes it. Don't you want to maybe see how it plays out, though? Maybe the last few episodes, it starts to not be so glorious for MJ.
Yeah.
Well, Burns is saying that it doesn't fall under the heading of a documentary.
Just because he could have affected it.
He could have affected it and provided them with stuff. So I don't know.
Do you remember when the baseball documentary came out from Ken Burns? And this is 93, 94, that Keith Olbermann like eviscerated all the mistakes that Ken Burns made. And I remember one in particular, and I went back and I saw it, and it's egregious, but you don't notice it at the time. It's a montage of Mantle home runs, and one of them is a modern day home run at Wrigley Field that he made black and white.
Oh,
really?
And like Keith, because Keith is a big baseball historian, like started listing all the mistakes that Ken Burns made. You wouldn't notice them because you know Keith is over the top with his knowledge about baseball, but. I don't look at it in that traditional sense. I think there's different ways to do a documentary. And what I was going to say before, Brian Gumbel put a lot of pressure on the last six episodes, right? When we had him on, like, I don't know how you're going to get six more episodes out of this.
Well, but Gumbel also, let's be honest, loved having Brian Gumbel on the show. Loved it. He also just isn't into Jordan.
Right. You could tell.
The Bengals have released Andy Dalton. It takes $17.7 million off the team's salary cap. Obviously, with Joe Burrow in town, they don't need him. A man who will one day be a top five guest on this show, Lewis Riddick, spoke about where he thinks Dalton will land.
The conversation is going to immediately focus on the New England Patriots and whether or not, from a fit perspective, does he fit what possibly they would be looking for in terms of a veteran acquisition in the context of their offense. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I don't have any intel on that, although I would only just say this right now. You know, like two over the past 3 years, Andy has really struggled as far as completing above, even getting, you know, cracking the 60% completion percentage plateau, and his yards per attempt have been down too. So, you know, in the six yards per attempt range. Now, a lot of that doesn't, I mean, there are more things than just him that have to do with that. Obviously, pass protection, consistency of the weaponry on the perimeter, all that has to do with that. Now, but it will be interesting to see if New England does investigate this and kick the tires here, because from a profile standpoint, it would make sense from a veteran acquisition standpoint for them.
So we'll see. LeBron James is backing a primetime TV special for graduating high school seniors. This is pretty cool. LeBron's foundation, along with a couple other groups, are getting together to do a one-hour special called Graduate Together, America Honors the High School Class of 2020. Simulcasted across ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, TikTok, everything on May 16th. The event's going to pay tribute to high schoolers graduating this year whose graduation season was upended by coronavirus. Lots of celebrity appearances, etc. We talk about all the losses. Guys, just to be serious for one sec about this subject, I know death and all those things are nothing compares to sickness and death and losing someone. However, in my lifetime of 40 years, second semester senior year of high school for me was as fun a time as I've ever had in my entire life. To lose that, to lose everything these kids are losing. Guys, I was heartbroken my senior year because there was a thunderstorm and we had our homecoming parade canceled. So I didn't get to like be one of the seniors on the track sitting in a car as we drove around. Like, I missed that one stupid event and I was so bummed out. For the senior class to lose everything is such a huge deal, and I think it's a great event that they're doing.
There's so many friends of mine that have older kids that have told me, you're so fortunate your twins are 2.5. They don't know what's going on. Because I got one buddy whose son, like the week before the shutdown, or just before the shutdown, was to find out whether he made the high school baseball team or not. And he still doesn't know. And even if he did make it, there's not going to probably be a season for him to play in. You know, all the things that are missed, the sports and dances and recitals and things that can't possibly be made up.
But that's why I think it's nice they're focusing on high school seniors, because that's one you never get back. It's just, I don't know. Michael, did you have fun senior year?
Yeah, I mean, not to the extent you did. It wasn't that big. You know, it was a really, mine was a really labor-intensive high school. I mean, if you everything was about grades. It really was, and I'm not trying to play the martyr here, but yours sounded like it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. By that point, by the early senior year, everyone kind of knew where they were going to college, and you still went to school, and we were there, but, man, it was a fun year, and all the events at the end. I mean, I got to live the typical suburban life
Maryland,
of beach week and graduation.
Maryland was obviously your backup school. What was your first school?
I got into every school that I applied to, except, sadly, I didn't get into Newhouse at Syracuse.
Oh.
So,
and I got just
I applied
Peter's
to Rutgers. Rutgers, oh, nice. Michael, I know you're interested. Emerson College in Boston.
Nice. That would have been a great way to spend 4 years.
No, I had to get good grades. My father, you know, wanted it. I played baseball my senior year, so it was important, and it was labor-intensive and all the things you were talking about. But the thing that Peter's talking about, I think, is all the extra stuff. And still, the greatest party I have ever gone to in my life was after graduation at Frank Finari's house.
Whose?
Frank Finari.
Frank could have a party.
Budweiser
had the
Nips
party.
Over Gypsy Palm.
You know, right Brian up there, Clixes. You know, with like American Pie kind of party.
Yeah.
Frank's still with us?
Oh, my God. To my knowledge, I have lost contact with him. But I do remember his name. But it was like that kind of carrying over into the next day.
Oh, yeah.
Like a whole, like, really. That was
senior year. Parties are different when you're a senior. So, anyways, I'm glad they're doing the special. I think it's needed. These kids, they're going to miss out on something they never get. It's a bummer. That'll do it for ENN on this Thursday evening. Thanks, Don.
Would it be wrong for me to just give one more ENN story?
I think you should
congratulate the Mets.
Go ahead.
That's right.
It's your show.
I want to give credit to Yoenis Cespedes and Robinson Cano, who within the last half hour tweeted out that because they liked him so much and the story has struck them so hard that they are both going to donate to the GoFundMe cause for Anthony Causey's children.
Nice.
That's really a nice thing for them to do. So good job by Yoenis and by Cano. We're talking about the post photographer that lost his battle with COVID-19 and has two young children. So really good stuff.
That's great.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.